Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, what if Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes both miss the playoffs? Are those two teams done? Can Shedeur Sanders take a claim to be QB1 in 2026 in Cleveland? And the Minnesota Vikings make an odd kind of history. Join Frank Schwab and yours truly for Inside Coverage next. All right, let's do a show. You think you could win the AFC? Maybe you could get a couple of buddies together that you did your turkey bowl with last week, and maybe you too can win the American Football Conference. Welcome to another edition of Inside Coverage on Yahoo, a Monday after week 14 edition of Inside Coverage, the how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. It's not only chaos in the AFC. Honestly, I'm looking at the NFC and I'm like, didn't you used to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Are you any good? We have questions there as well, including questions about the Chicago Bears. Honestly, I don't have as many questions as Frank does, but I'm sure before we get to the AFC, hi there, Frank Schwab. Would you like to take a victory lap about the Bears who fought and fought with the Packers down to the very final minute at Lambeau before Keyshawn Nixon said literally bleep you with his interception?
Yeah, he really did. No victory lap. I was impressed by the Bears. I can't lie to you. Lambeau, lose by
Breaking
seven.
News, Frank. Are you
20
okay?
20 seconds left. Like, that's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with that loss, especially for a team that has one quality win all year. So it was a perfectly reasonable loss. Like, okay. Now let's see what happens 2 weeks from now in Chicago. That's the test. Like, if the Packers come in, they beat you at Soldier Field. I think that's a Saturday night game later in the season. So, yeah, we'll see then. But no, nothing about that Bears loss. I'm not sitting here saying, ha-ha, I told you, the Bears aren't very good. The Bears stood toe-to-toe with the Packers for most of that game.
They did.
I hated the play call. I hated the play call, fourth and one. You got two timeouts left. You're not in any big rush to go to the end zone. Or Caleb could have just thrown short to DJ Moore. I just think the decision to throw to Caleb or to Cole Kmet in the end zone right there was not the right one. But whatever, the Bears competed tonight. They were right there with the Packers. I don't care. It was a 7-point loss. It was right there for the taking. It was a coin flip at the end. So no victory lap of the Bears. Okay. That was a perfectly reasonable performance by them.
We will unpack, so to speak, what that means for the NFC North and do a deeper dive on that game coming up in a little bit here on Inside Coverage. Also coming up, we'll tell you that the Bears next week, no surprise, will try to bounce back, and they'll have to do so against Shedeur Sanders, who's coming off
an
unbelievable performance. I was there for that.
An
historic performance, actually. No one's anointing him yet, okay? Nobody. But Kevin Stefanski did say Monday he's going to be the starter, no shocker, the rest of the way. He played well. He played well. I was there for that. We will unpack that story coming up in a little bit. But our headline here, if you want to call it our headline, we're going to open the show not with Frank's review of Buffalo Wild Wings as he was sitting there for 7 hours in Colorado, but with just chaos in the AFC. As we sit here today, the Denver Broncos are the number one seed in the American Football Conference at 11-2, ahead of the New England Patriots, also 11-2. Patriots Bills, by the way, coming up this week. Huge game. Huge, huge, huge game here, your AFC standings. But look at the Jaguars creeping up. They handled the Colts. They're 9-4. The Steelers, all of a sudden, reports of Aaron Rodgers' demise. Maybe a bit exaggerated. He's throwing deep to DK Metcalf, almost as if to say, hey, look, I can do something other than back shoulder on the outside. I can stretch the field. And then you have the Bills. All of a sudden, they're back, even though they were down 10 points in the fourth quarter to the Bengals in the snow. But, I mean, that's called having the Bengals defense exactly where you want them. And then they're the Chargers, who, as we sit here recording this, have yet to take the field against the Eagles on Monday night, but they get Amarian Hampton back. Or you have the Houston Texans. Honestly, I don't know that anybody wants to play the Houston Texans right now. Anybody. And they have as much of a chance to win the AFC, truly, as anybody. But I think the crazy chaos, if you will, from all of this, Frank, the headline from the AFC on Sunday, is the fact that I think the Colts are in trouble. I think they're in major trouble. And at this point, I'd be surprised if they make the postseason. What was a fantastic story is now a tragic one. And I say tragedy, not in the Shakespearean sense that somebody is about to die or maybe did die. Daniel Jones is alive, but he has a long road to recovery. He tore his Achilles, not the same side as the broken leg, but the other side. It's his right calf, his right Achilles. And you're heartbroken for the guy. At least I am. I mean, he had a great renaissance. So a 1 year, $14 million prove a contract. He proved it. He did. He was going to get paid. The Colts were all in. They traded two number one picks to the Jets to get Sauce Gardner, who has his own calf injury, not an Achilles. He missed this week, hopefully back soon. But the Colts right now are out of it. They are the 8th seed. They are one below the cut line. And their schedule is not favorable. Matter of fact, it's
toughest
awful.
In the NFL.
They have to go to Seattle. They have to play the 49ers. They have to play the Jaguars. And then they have to go to Houston in week 18. And right now they're going to have to do it with Riley Leonard, the rookie out of Notre Dame, who one talent evaluator joked to me last year, will make a great linebacker in the NFL. The kid I thought was okay yesterday. I'm not trying to pile on. But no one thinks that with Riley Leonard, this team is going to run that gauntlet and make the postseason. And behind him, it's Brett Rippon. And Brett Rippon may actually have to be the guy because Riley came in on Monday and told Shane Steichen his knee doesn't feel right. The Colts aren't going to make the playoffs, Frank.
They're not. And it's just, you use the term heartbreaking, and that's what it is. Not just for Daniel Jones, but for the Colts as well. To start 7-1, and right now, I don't, look, maybe Riley Leonard is Brock Purdy. We don't know.
Maybe.
We'll see.
It'd be great. I hope
I doubt
he is.
It. I hope he is too. It'd be awesome. But I doubt it. Like, I assume the Colts lose out. And that just stinks. Like, it just stinks for how good they were. Legitimately good. Like, nobody should be celebrating over this. And there's so many ramifications here, Andrew. Like, it's not just, hey, the Colts are going to miss the playoffs and then whatever. The slate is kind of clean in 2026. Daniel Jones is a free agent. What do the Colts do? If Achilles injuries are usually a year to get completely right. Well, right. That's, you know, he did this week 14. Like, do you franchise him just thinking that, well, you're going to be there week 14? Do you come up with a long-term deal for him with some protections involved? Because part of the reason they traded for Sauce Gardner was we don't need those first round picks anymore. We got a quarterback. We're good.
We're all in. Let's go right now.
Another ramification, those draft picks get better for the Jets. Like, it's just it's part of the math, too. Ramifications like the 49ers had to play at the Colts in a couple weeks. That looked like a losable game for the 49ers, and teams in the NFC wildcard race were probably like, okay, the 49ers lose that game. Nope, not anymore, probably. Like, it changes the NFC playoff race. It changes things for a team like the Jaguars, who won yesterday, and they might have won anyway, who knows, but they win yesterday against the Colts. They take over first place. The path for the Texans is clear. What about, like, there is a reasonable, not crazy, I don't think it's going to happen, but a reasonable storyline where we're sitting here in a few weeks, and I'm saying, remember the Daniel Jones injury? Yeah, that knocked the Colts out and allowed the Chiefs to get the 7th seed. Like, something like that. There's so many butterfly effects. So many butterfly effects involved with Daniel Jones's injury. This absolutely changes the whole NFL season. It really does. And that's weird to say about a Colts team that's not even going to make the playoffs, but Everything changed. And it has ramifications deep into 2026 and beyond, too, when you consider the draft picks they traded for Sauce.
Yeah. When the trade happened, my first reaction was, well, good for them. And I love Sauce Gardner. I don't know that it would have given up two number ones, but he's a game-changing player. And you went out and you got your game-changing player for a Lou Anarumo defense that was playing well. Sauce Gardner is a heck of a football player. But the risk was, and we said this at the time, this is not revisionist history, that if for some reason it doesn't work out with Daniel Jones. Like, for example, if, let's say, it took a Sam Darnold trajectory, where in December or in January in the playoffs, like with Darnold last year with the Vikings, you go, I'm not sure anymore that he's the guy. Well, then you've given up the draft capital, and you don't have the ability, with those two number one picks that you gave up to get Sauce Gardner, to go find your new quarterback. Now, chances are, at least this year, that first number one pick that you gave up would be at the bottom of the round. Now, I mean, if there's any silver lining, and believe me, it's hard to look for a silver lining here. If they lose games, that number one pick does obviously keep going up and up and up, but you don't have it anymore. You don't. It's gone. It's gone. The Jets have that number one pick. So what do? If you look at the time frame coming back from the Achilles, so let's take Aaron Rodgers a couple of years ago, right? He tore his Achilles week one. That's in September. He was able to get back on the practice field late in December. I don't think there's really truly any chance he could have played, but they did put him back on the practice field and not in a game. That's only a couple of months, but that is extreme, obviously, and he wasn't going to come back and be mobile. A big part of what Daniel Jones made this offense so good this year is his mobility, was his ability to move around and make plays out of structure, be a threat in the run game, or build that run game, build that mobility into Shane Steichen's structure. He's not going to come back in 3 months and do that. Look at Deshaun Watson, who just tore his Achilles a second time, but that re-tear happened last December. He only came back on the practice field this past week. So who knows if Daniel Jones, A, is going to be ready next September, if he's a Colt or wherever he goes, and B, if he is back, is he the same guy? It really is heartbreaking. Did you see, by the way, Frank, Trevor Lawrence's reaction? Because he evidently didn't know. You see that?
Oh, I have not. No, I did not.
Okay, so he's doing a post-game interview with Evan Washburn. Did the game for CBS down there and talking about the comeback, or not the comeback, talking about, you know, the Colts, the Chiefs, I'm sorry, the Jaguars don't get the respect and the typical questions, and said, hey, you got to feel bad as well. Evan said, for Daniel Jones, who tore his Achilles, and you see the look on Trevor's face, he goes, oh no, I didn't know that. And that, I think, was everyone's reaction. I know we're doing the Browns game yesterday, and we see that it's an Achilles, and we all went, oh boy.
Yeah, you could know, you could tell immediately. I'm not saying that about Trevor Lawrence. He's dealing with his own things on the sideline. Yeah, he's not playing amateur doctor, but yeah. You could tell right away. We've seen it enough by now to know what an Achilles is. And then the vision of Daniel Jones slamming his helmet onto the ground because he knew. That was the heartbreaking moment for me, where I just said, this great, great story. Honestly, Daniel Jones was one of the stories of the NFL, one of the uplifting stories of the NFL season. And it just, in a second, it vanished. And he said they're playing on a fractured leg, Andrew. Like, he was like, no, my team needs me. I'm going to go out there and play on a fractured leg. Hats off to him for that. Hats off to him for the season he has had. But everything changes. Like, even something like, and I don't think this is the case, Andrew, but is Shane Steichen in trouble if they lose out? If they go from 7-1 to 8-9?
To me, that's unfair. That's totally unfair.
I think that's how the Ursay family will view it.
Yeah.
But I hope so. Everything changed. It's impossible to quantify every single thing to change with Daniel Jones' injury yesterday. But it changes the NFL landscape. And again, not just for the last 4 weeks of the season and the playoff picture, but guys' careers. And it is just what a brutal injury on so many fronts.
Let me I said something a little snarky there about Riley Leonard. I interviewed him down at the Senior Bowl. He's a local from near Mobile, and it was a cool moment for him. And the Notre Dame kids all showed up, right? They played they played deep into the playoff, and they did not tap out of the Senior Bowl. They all went down there, and they all worked hard. I like Riley Leonard a lot. I don't know that many people project him as a starting NFL quarterback. They just didn't. And yes, someone did joke to me that he would make a good linebacker in the NFL. That is a unenviable position to be thrown into. Remember, he's supposed to be the third quarterback. Anthony Richardson is still on IR and nowhere near coming back, evidently, with the orbital fracture. He's not even yet cleared to practice. So Riley Leonard, a guy who's a developmental project, who was the third string quarterback but elevated to two after the Richardson injury, was thrown in there. He did the best he could, and if he has to start the rest of the way, look, he's a tough, tough, tough kid.
Yeah.
It will just be a very difficult slog for them. The flip side of that is we saw Trevor Lawrence. He played a good game, Frank. Look, for every time you look at Trevor Lawrence and say, man, he is loose with the football. Man, you got pressured. You threw another pick. He's got a lot of turnovers this year, leading the league at one point. Yesterday was not one of those games. The Jaguars have dominated the Colts. It's 11 consecutive that they have beaten the Colts. When the Jags are the home team, some of those are London games. There's obviously the Carson Wentz game a couple of years ago where, in essence, it cost him his job, where they just had to beat the Jaguars to get in. It didn't happen. The late Mr. Ursay then said, I'm done here. At least that is with Carson Wentz. The Jaguars are all of a sudden a team to reckon with, Frank.
They are. I don't know how they're doing it, to be honest with you.
I don't either. But Trevor's playing well. That's part of it.
Yeah, it's, but he's played well, but he's up and down. Like, you just don't know play to play what you're getting out of Trevor Lawrence. I still think that's just part of his DNA at this point. He's almost like a Jameis Winston type, where it looks great one play and looks terrible the next. He did play well yesterday and made some plays that, like, you're like, that's a superstar play. Why can't you just bottle that up for the rest of the season? And look, I want to be right about the Jaguars. I picked the Jaguars to win this division before the season started. It's cool to be right about something like that when everybody wasn't picking that. But I don't see how they keep this up. And I don't think they're the best team in our own division. We'll talk about that team in a little bit. But look, the Jaguars, you look at Liam Cohen's first season. Here they are, first place, 9-4. Who cares how they got there? They do have quality wins, too, like at San Francisco. Yeah I mean, so to your point, I just don't – they're like the AFC as a whole. I look at them. I look at the record, but I say, are they good? I don't think so. I don't – can you envision the Jaguars being in a Super Bowl? Not really. Like, I can't.
No,
but
I can't.
Here they are. They're 9-4. Like, they're having a great, great season. Wins and losses for sure. Liam Cohen's first year. But I don't view them as a threat to win the AFC. But then again, who do I see as a threat to win the AFC? There's no great team in the AFC this year. So
yeah,
who knows? Maybe they just keep this thing going and Trevor just turns it on for a few games like he did. I think it was his second year in the league, maybe his third year in the league, where he had like an 8-game stretch where he legitimately looked like the Trevor Lawrence we all expected. Mm-hmm. That just hasn't really shown up that often since. It just spurts, but who knows? In this weird AFC, anybody, anything's possible. The Jaguars go, look, the way that this works out with the Jaguars in Houston, they both have one really, really tough game left. I think the Jaguars play at Denver. Houston plays
in two
at
weeks.
The Chargers.
Yeah.
What happens in those games, weirdly enough, because they don't play each other again, is probably going to determine who wins the AFC South. I don't really think the Jaguars are winning at Denver, but maybe. You don't know. So we'll see. It's just a very interesting story that's developing in Jacksonville, because I think they're going to build on this and get better and better. But as I sit here now, I feel like such a hater. I'm like, yeah, you're 9-4, but do I believe in you? Not really, to be honest.
Well, first of all, you don't truly hate any of these teams.
No,
that is
like
Gen X word.
To be Andrew.
That is a Gen X word that is overused. Hate is hate. We know what hate is. Picking the other team is not hate. It's just a sports opinion, right? So no, you're not a hater, Frank. You're just a professional sports writer, and you have to have opinions. I'll ask you this though. So here, give me an opinion. Would you rather play the Jaguars, or would you rather play the 7-6 and now AFC North leading Steelers, who think Isaiah Likely caught a touchdown? Do you agree, Isaiah Likely, that's a touchdown?
That's a great question, because I looked at that replay over and over and over and over. I
think it's a
ultimately
touchdown.
Think it was an okay call. I think it was fine. Like the third foot.
But then how is Aaron Rodgers catching a deflected pass and down in the pocket? Come on.
Yeah, I get never it. Had that. And I totally get that it's hard. We're still trying to define a catch, 20 years after the Calvin Johnson game?
Yeah.
But I'd say it's fine. Like, if they would have called it a touchdown, fine with that. I'm also fine with them not calling it a touchdown. I know that's very wishy-washy, but I don't know.
As a Browns fan, I do not mind watching a Ravens-Steeler game marred by officiating. Let there be bad calls against both teams. Truly. It warms my heart, truly. But I do think Isaiah Likely caught that ball. I do. I think it was a touchdown. And I don't like the call on Travis Jones on special teams. They say he unnecessarily roughed the long snapper. And today John Harbaugh said that the league office told him they got that one wrong, and you're allowed to go say that we got that one wrong. So, look, the Ravens have a legitimate gripe. Lamar also needs to throw the ball, all right? Get it out of your hand. Just do it. Ravens have to be better running the football in the red zone. A lot of these things all can be true. But I'll go back to it. Do you want to play the Jaguars or the Steelers? Because I don't know that the Steelers winning that game in Baltimore, good for them, by the way, heck of a victory. I don't know that clears up many doubts that I had about the Steelers. Aaron Rodgers goes, well, maybe you guys will shut up about Mike Tomlin this week. Come on, Aaron. That stuff gets out there because that stuff gets out there, and that's a whole nother show. But, yeah, you threw the ball deep a couple of times. So there, Frank, I'm not letting you answer. Jags or Steelers, who do you want to play?
Oh, I'd easily rather play the Steelers. I do think Sunday said more about the Ravens. The Ravens, like I sat here a few weeks ago, said Ravens are going to win the AFC. And if the Ravens team I thought existed showed up, they would have.
The AFC North or the AFC?
The AFC. I thought the Ravens could be one of those teams. If you envision the Ravens team we thought they were going to be and what they were at the end of last year, put them in this AFC, I think they win it, but not anymore.
But they haven't been that team all year.
I know.
At no point have they been that team this year.
But being very stubborn, Andrew. I just was stubborn on the Ravens because I thought They have the best, I think the best player in the world still, Lamar Jackson. He's not having a good year, but he's the best player in the world in my eyes. And it's just not happening. And you start, you do have to start wondering, look, were we talking about the wrong coach in the AFC North that might not be back next year? Like, if the Ravens go on and lose a division,
great question.
Can we, like, Mike Tomlin wins a division and then you part ways with him? That would be a little weird, but whatever. We'll talk about Tomlin, I'm sure, many times as the season goes on. What about John Harbaugh, though? It's been a long time with him, and something's off in Baltimore. Something's really off. That team has been bad all year. You are absolutely correct. From week one, when they blew that lead against the Bills, they've been a bad football team. I ignored it. I absolutely sat here and just put my fingers in my ears and said, la, 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 la. No, the Ravens are going to be good. They're going to turn it on. They're going to get going in the second half. They're going to end up going to a Super Bowl. Like, nope.
Could you actually do that for me, please? If you did, la, could you do la, that no, now? Put your fingers in your ears and go la la la. Because social would love
I have
that.
Earphones in. Yeah, la, la, okay. I have earphones in, or I would do that for Top you. But out. The Ravens just aren't that team. They're bad. They're a bad football team. They're bad in every metric. They're bad when you watch them. They're just a bad football team, and it's not turning around. That's not going to turn around. So, to answer the question, I don't think the Steelers are suddenly like great again. Like, I just think that they beat a bad Ravens team that's really, really struggling right now. And the Jaguars bring some things to the table. They're really good stopping the run. They can run the ball well, which that plays well in January, of course. But I don't trust either team, to be honest. But who do I trust in the AFC? There's one team I kind of trust, but I don't. We'll talk about them after the break. I know that.
Okay, we will. And I'll say this as well. And I asked this question in the press box with my Browns crew before the game. Yeah, there where the Titans beat the Browns is a whole other story. I said, this is the 39th meeting between Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh. They are scheduled for a 40th meeting in a couple of weeks. Will they meet a 41st time? Or is this,
what do you think?
Are
Am
these
I crazy
the final
to think
two?
That, am Mike I crazy Tomlin, to think John Harbaugh, not a, necessarily in the hot seat, but we've been talking about Tomlin.
I don't think it's crazy.
It's not crazy. Right? At some point, you're just because like, this Ravens team is really underachieved this year.
It's the same thing with both coaches. Really it's not a condemnation. If you want to condemn them, go ahead. It's not a condemnation of either coach. It's this adage that after a while, does the message run stale? After a while, is it time organizationally to just go, hey, thank you for everything you've done. Let us give you a big hug and wish you well. And just, we need to go in a different direction. Maybe it's good for both of us. The same logic you use with Mike Tomlin, you can use with John Harbaugh. And it's not a personal assault. It's not an attack. It's not in any way taking away from the championships won and the wins and the trophies and the lobby in Owings Mills. Nothing. It's just saying, like in Pittsburgh, is it time where we're like, let's try something different? And you get asked the same question about both sides. And honestly, whatever you think right now, it may change next week and in 2 weeks, and it may change week 18. So just think about it and realize that your opinion is allowed to change between now and then. All right, coming up, I don't think anybody wants to play the Houston Texans. Are the Houston Texans the surprise team that could come away with an AFC championship? And are the Chiefs really dead? Here's a hint, they are. That's next on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. That is Frank Schwab. My name is Andrew Siciliano. This is the how and the why. By the way, before we continue, Frank, I just want to note that Jori Epstein can't be here on the show today, but she did write a great article. She was at Ravens Steelers. Everyone go to Yahoo's NFL page. Yep. Read about that. Talked about the discount double check and how Aaron ran. Obviously, he got the rushing touchdown. Great quote from Will Howard, the rookie quarterback from Ohio State, in which Howard said that they had been asking Aaron Rodgers all year for the discount double check celebration, but that Rodgers said no, only on a rushing touchdown. So he got that rushing touchdown and bam, pulled the belt out, and the Steelers loved it. Anyway, moving on. I don't think anybody loves if you're in the AFC watching what the Texans are doing. Houston's defense is legit number one of the NFL, and Houston's defense turned away the Chiefs on two critical fourth downs last night, and they beat the Chiefs 20-10. Offensively, they made enough plays. They lost Nick Chubb, but Woody Marks, for my money, is the real deal. 8-5 are your Houston Texans right now. The Chiefs fall to 6-7. We could stop making the 6-7 jokes. I'm not going to do that, okay? I'm not going to be that guy. I'm a man. I'm old. I'm not going to make 6-7 jokes. But Frank, which way do you want to take this? The ascending Chiefs or the descending? I'm sorry, the ascending Texans or the descending Chiefs? It's like the old morning talk show question. Which is more of a story here? The fact that the Texans are good or the Chiefs are not likely going to make the playoffs. As we sit here, Kansas City is the 10 seed in the AFC, and their remaining schedule is the Chargers at home, on the road at Tennessee, Denver at home, on the road at Vegas. It's a bad math problem now with all the teams ahead of them that they've lost to.
Yeah, two really tough games there. You got to win out. I mean, the two of those games are very easy, too. They should win those. But yes, the Chiefs being about 15% to make the playoffs, if you trust the projection models, that's the story of the NFL season. But I do want to talk about the Texans. I teased them a little bit before the break. I'm starting to look around this AFC and saying, what do I trust? Like, the Patriots have a great record. Drake May's having a great season. Great coach. This is going to be Drake May's first playoff foray. I don't really trust their defense. They're not very good metrically. The Broncos, their offense is not good. We know that. Like, it's very, very inconsistent. Yeah, Sean Payton could scheme some things up and they can get on a roll. But somebody is going to be flawed coming out of the AFC. So why not the best defense in football? I don't think anybody is arguing this is the best defense in football. I know maybe Broncos fans, maybe Seahawks fans would, but you're wrong. The Texans are the best defense in football. We saw them destroy in a three-week stretch. Destroy Josh Allen and destroy Patrick Mahomes. They sacked Allen 8 times in that game. We all saw that on Thursday night. Last night, Patrick Mahomes had a 19 passer rating. 19. Like, that seemed unfathomable to me that would ever happen to Patrick Mahomes in an actual NFL game, but it happened because this defense is so good. And when you look back, they've won 5 in a row, and 4 of those wins are the Jaguars, who are pretty much a lock to make the playoffs now. They beat the Bills, who are pretty much a lock to make the playoffs now. They beat the Colts, who are a playoff quality team, I mean, with Daniel Jones in the lineup, and then they win yesterday at the Chiefs. Like, why not the Texans? Why can't the Texans pull a 2015 Broncos here and make it all the way to the Super Bowl? Because I don't see any unit in the NFL that I have more trust in than the Houston defense. Now, their offense is a problem. 24th in DVOA, 24th in EPA per play. Like, this is not a good offense. Like, they still have their issues on the line. But CJ Stroud's a good quarterback, and some of these young receivers and their young running back, Woody Marks, really coming along, making enough plays. Somebody flawed is coming out of the AFC, so why not a team who is flawed on offense, yes, but also has the best defensive football in the Houston Texans? I'm jumping on board to say that, you know, they look like the hottest team in the AFC, and I see no reason they can't pretty much run the table from here to the Super Bowl. Like, it just, and again, it's in a normal AFC, I don't know if I'd pick a team with this bad of an offense. But this is not a normal AFC. This is a wide open AFC, and they have the one bankable asset other than Josh Allen that's going to be in the AFC playoff picture. And we saw what happened when Houston played Josh Allen a few weeks ago.
I guess it really comes down to who do you like more, CJ Stroud or Bo Nix? Because you could argue that, look, the Broncos have 55 sacks. Broncos lead the NFL in sacks. They have, I believe, 11 more than the Browns, who are second to the NFL and did, you know, only got to Cam Ward really once yesterday. So it's really Denver's got an elite defense. Houston's got an elite defense. Are you telling me that you trust CJ Stroud more than you trust Bo Nix?
Very fair question. I don't know. I mean, I want to trust CJ Stroud more. It's not just a quarterback either. If we're just picking him on the playground, I'd pick CJ Stroud over Bo Nix, but we're not. The Broncos also have one of the best offensive lines in football.
Would you pick Sean Payton over D'Amico Ryans?
Yes. Yes, I would. Okay. I would. And I like D'Amico Ryans a lot. I think D'Amico Ryans was a grand slam hire for them when they had no business hiring
Sean's
somebody
got a Super
as good
Bowl.
As D'Amico Ryans. Sean's got a Super Bowl. Sean's a Hall of Fame-ish resume. D'Amico's not there yet, but he's great. He's a fantastic coach. These two teams, you're right, there are a lot of similarities here. Broncos have the much better offensive line. But we don't even know if Houston's going to have to play at Denver. Like, who knows how this is going to shake out. I just like what I see out of Houston. If you just the eye test, metrics are great too, for obviously for their defense, especially, but just the eye test, this defense is looking like 2000 Ravens lately. They're just battering teams. Like, again, Patrick Mahomes' passer rating yesterday was 19. You could spike the ball into the ground every time, and I think it's a 37. Like, he was that bad in that game, and you don't make Patrick Mahomes look bad. They made him look bad. They made Josh Allen look bad, the reigning MVP. This defense is absolutely championship quality, and again, the AFC is wide open. So, yeah, I mean, you touched on it. I'm sitting here talking about them. Houston's kind of the team that's getting hot at the right time.
So if you look at the bracket here, and again, this is all before the Monday night game. And if the Eagles beat the Chargers on Monday night, that means the Broncos can actually wrap up. Let me double check that. I believe that means the Broncos can wrap up the division. So let's see if the Here it is. If LA loses on Monday night, then Denver can clinch the AFC West title with a win over Green Bay and then a Charger loss at Kansas City next week. Okay, so it would be a three-team parlay in essence, but step number one would be the Chargers losing on Monday night. We're recording this before Monday night. Short version is Denver can win the division, wrap up the AFC West in week 15. There's a scenario there. But if the playoffs were to start today, they don't. You'd have Houston at New England in round one, in the wild card round. You'd have the Chargers at Jacksonville. So that would be a rematch of the game a couple of years ago where the Chargers rallied or blew that massive lead. And then you would have Buffalo on the road at Pittsburgh. Those are all great games. And I mean, they're all games that could go in any possible direction. But none of those games include Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes. And for the Chiefs to make it in right now, it's just not going to happen. And I know you'll talk about the passer rating. Consider the fact that Wanye Morris, and they're already down 2-0 linemen, blows his knee out on the play terrible of the game. An injury where Tirico's like, we're not going to show it to you again. The first play of the game, he is now done for the year. And Mahomes had, obviously, the key drops late in the game. One of them from Travis Kelce. And Kelce walked off the field with his helmet on last night, up the tunnel with his helmet on, sat in the locker room, according to those who are in there, in his jersey, in his full uniform for a long time after the game. There's still a month left in the season. Last night felt like, in essence, a primetime goodbye to this Chiefs group as we know it. Does Travis Kelce come back for another year? I don't think so. Could be wrong. Don't know. He's getting married at, you know, fairy tale wedding in the offseason. Everyone's happy for him. But there comes a time where you just go, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm ready for the next stage in my life. Does Travis Kelce want to come back to a team next year? And conversely, do the Chiefs want him back? I'm guessing yes. But do you want to come back next year to a team that clearly needs a little bit of reconstruction? Oh, what a horrible thing to say that they're not going to win the division for the first time in a decade. Yeah. Okay. Broncos are likely going to win the division here. But when that happens, you need to take a step back and reevaluate and make some tough decisions here. Is one of them Travis Kelce? Don't know. But Patrick Mahomes can't do it all by himself. Every single time. I'm not going to quote Giselle. My husband can't throw the ball and catch the ball. I'm not going to go there. But obviously, there were times where Mahomes was let down. And there were times where that Houston defense, as you said, Frank, is truly elite and championship quality. But last night, I don't want to call it a funeral. It felt like a final goodbye to this Chiefs team, this version of it.
I will push back a little bit because, yes, it's going to look different, but NFL teams look different from year to year. And the Kelce thing, of course, I don't think Kelce returns. Who knows? We'll see. He's actually been fairly productive this year at an age when he should have been retired a few years ago. He's really defied the age cliff at tight end for many, many years. Cats off to him. So will he look different? Yes. But I keep hearing, like, I think that we've gotten to the point where all Chiefs conversations are so toxic that we just want the Chiefs to go away for a while. Like, we're sick of them. I'm not sick of them, but a lot of people are. I'm not sick of just them. Open social media, right? So they're almost wish casting this is it for the Chiefs. I saw some prominent clip today of like, oh, the Chiefs are heading for a rebuild. Like, what are we talking about?
It's not a rebuild. You have Mahomes.
They have Patrick Mahomes.
And you have a good defense. Andy
Reid. They have a really good defense. They have Steve Spagnuolo. They have Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy. And there's still a lot to like about the Chiefs who, again, if you look at, I said this last week, I think, if you look at the metrics, there's not that big of a difference between the 2024 Chiefs and the 2025 Chiefs as far as the just play-in, play-out quality of their football team. What the difference is, the Chiefs won all the close games last year, which really padded their record. They were not a 15-2 type football team. But now the pendulum has swung the other way, and the regression hits so hard that they can't win a close game. That's really the only difference. The Chiefs are still a very good football team. I know you love DVOA. They're seventh right now in DVOA. Do I think they're that good? Maybe not, but they're not the Raiders. They're not the Titans. Like, the Chiefs are going to be just fine. This is a pause in their dynasty. That's all it is. I think they come back next year. They're going to be one of the top five teams of football. I don't really have a question about what they can do in their front office, what Andy can do, what Patrick can do, even without Travis Kelce. I think this is still a dynasty. I don't think the dynasty is over. This is almost like a different scenario, but in 2008, the New England Patriots missed the playoffs right after their great 2007 season. Now, yeah,
that was the Brady injury season. In the first quarter. Brady injured in September. Matt Castle, they still won 10 games, but they didn't make the playoffs.
Still 11, actually. Yeah, and somehow missed the playoffs through tiebreakers. Crazy. But I just view it as that. I view it as, okay, you missed the playoffs once. I also brought up the example of the 1982 49ers. They missed the playoffs too. Strike shortened season right after winning a Super Bowl, Joe Montana. That didn't bother their dynasty. And I don't think this is going to bother the Chiefs dynasty either. It's just going to be weird. We're going to look back and be like, oh yeah, there was that season the Chiefs missed the playoffs. I don't think this is like, we got to blow it up. Now we got to rebuild. No, they got to retool. Every team does though. I mean, that's pretty common. They do have flaws. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think this is like the end of the dynasty or anything. People want that to be the case. Like, desperately want that to be the case. It's not. The Chiefs are going to be just fine. This has just been a weird season for them, just like last season was weird in a different way.
So the article Frank is mentioning is up on the Yahoo NFL site as well, and you do a great job of breaking down everything with the Chiefs and how obviously they've had some bad luck and they haven't been winning the close games. And you do mention that Patriots team and that 49ers team in that piece as well. Read it this morning, and it lays it out pretty cleanly here. And to be clear, we do not think, at least I don't think, Frank, you do either, that this is like a Tomlin Harbaugh situation. Andy Reid has been there since 2013.
No.
Right. There were two fourth down decisions that he said today would have done the same thing. Right?
That's fine.
As Brian Billick always used to say.
Punted. The first one I would have punted. Would you have punted on either of those? First one I would have punted. I thought the Chiefs had the momentum. Their defense was playing well. Yeah. And you just handed
it. But momentum's not real, Frank, remember? The analytics people tell you momentum's not real. I have no problem with the decisions. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes. He's the ultimate deodorant here. He's a sorcerer. He's got to make the play. You have to believe he's going to make the play. Now, that leads to some arrogance. Certainly, but Andy Reid's a heck of a play designer and a play caller, and with that quarterback, I don't mind going for it at any point on the field. Now, you give the other team a short field. If you don't get it, obviously that's always the other side of it. Sure, Kevin Stefanski went for it on the 31 last week. They're down 10-8 in the third quarter. The Browns went for it on the 31. They didn't get lined up in time. They broke the huddle late. They should have called timeout. I had no problem with the play call. None. Harold Fannin botched the snap from under center. Whatever. It happens. But as Brian Billick has said 1,000 times, if it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't work, you're an idiot. Obviously. Andy Reid said he would have gone for him both times. But to be clear, getting back to my initial point, Frank, you don't think that this is a Tomlin Harbaugh situation with Andy Reid, right?
No, Andy Reid's
don't either.
Like, that's something, look, at some point, Andy Reid's just going to say, I don't know that I want to coach anymore. Like, there's been retirement speculation. None of it really well-founded. But at some point, maybe Andy Reid just says, you know what? I got my rings. My legacy's secure. I just want to go sit on a beach somewhere. Maybe that happens. So things can happen in the offseason. But if nothing like that happens to the Chiefs, if nothing, there's not a big upheaval that we don't see coming. And this includes, I think Kelce's going to retire. Again, this is not the end of the Chiefs dynasty. There's a pause to the Chiefs dynasty. They're going to be just fine next year. It's weird for a team that is. That is another thing, Andrew. I think not making the playoffs might actually help them in the long run, because one thing that has never really worn on the Chiefs, and maybe it's wearing on them this year, they have played so much extra football over the last 7 years. I think it's Mahomes' eighth year.
Takes a toll on your body.
It takes a toll, and all of a sudden this is catching up to them. And maybe they just need a break. Maybe they don't need four extra games every postseason. Like, this is not really caught up to them yet. Maybe it is this year. Maybe just they need our season's done on January 4th. Let's get an extra month of rest and come back next year strong.
I would phrase it this way.
I don't think this is the end of the Chiefs at any no stretch of my imagination. I think Chiefs 100% are going to be back in the playoffs next year.
I would phrase it this way. They don't need it, but they could sure get some benefit from it. Like, need it, meaning, we want to keep winning, obviously. But yeah, you know what? Maybe that is.
Maybe we'll look back and be like, that was actually kind of a blessing in disguise that they didn't play another three or four games.
Go back on a basketball perspective, and this has been, you know, written about constantly, especially when it comes to injuries and wear and tear. The fact that LeBron is still playing now is unbelievable. But the number of playoff games that guys like LeBron or Kobe or Michael Jordan, first world problem here, Steph as well, play over the length of their careers, when you're constantly making deep runs in the postseason or getting to the finals seemingly every year, I mean, that takes a toll. You add those games up, we're talking full extra seasons worth of games. Seasons. Like 82 game regular seasons worth of games by the end of their career than the average guy that's never making the playoffs. Obviously, first world problem. All right, let's get to the Bears. Frank, you have been long predicting the Bears' demise. I did not see a lot of the first half of this game. I had a travel nightmare, but eventually my brother and I settled down at Cleveland Hopkins International Airport and had a couple of beers and caught up and watched at least the decisive fourth quarter here, in which Caleb Williams is driving the Bears down the field. It looked as if maybe, just maybe, on a fourth down in the red zone, they're going to be able to extend this game or get a ball into the end zone. It didn't happen. Keyshawn Nixon picked him off on a fourth down play, very similar to ones they have run in weeks past. And Caleb put a little more juice on that ball, maybe led Cole Kmet to the corner, maybe, or threw that ball a half tick earlier, then he has a touchdown. And then we're discussing here, should Ben Johnson have gone for two and won the game on the road at Lambeau? He might have. But the Packers win, and then you get the very cold handshake afterwards. Not cold because it was cold in Green Bay, but the cold handshake between Matt LaFleur and Ben Johnson after Johnson had called him out back in January. The headline, though, through all of that, is that Green Bay takes control of the NFC North. The Packers are now the 2 seed, 9-3-1 ahead of the Eagles game Monday night in Los Angeles against the Chargers. The Packers go to Denver this week, then to Chicago. That is a Saturday game in Chicago, week 16, then Baltimore at home, then Minnesota. It is still, Frank, a gauntlet for the Packers.
Oh, absolutely. But they're playing better. And I just want to remind people, if you were on social media, like, what was it, two weeks ago, three weeks ago, say Matt LaFleur should get fired, he's coaching for his job. Don't do that. Don't. Matt LaFleur's a great coach. What are we doing here? Matt LaFleur's shown it the last couple of weeks, back-to-back wins over the Lions and the Bears to take over first place in the NFC North. You could see this team getting better. They haven't been great all season. They've had some stumbles. They lost to the Browns. They lost to the Panthers. They barely beat the Cardinals. They barely beat the Giants. But you see them kind of, you know, the talent is there and they're getting it together. I do love the whole, like, Matt LaFleur refuses to acknowledge Ben Johnson and this whole rivalry. Like, he won't do it. They asked him after the game yesterday. I'm sure you saw it, Andrew. Where they were like, yeah, well, what about that handshake? And he's like, oh, just normal handshake. We saw it. It wasn't a normal handshake. He barely touched his hand as he ran by.
Love it.
And then they're like, well, did that mean a little bit extra? Because Ben Johnson, what he said, and LaFleur, like, acted like he was absolutely oblivious to everything. He's like,
it's the Bears.
Big game in the NFC North. It's a Bears rivalry. It's big game in the NFC North. A lot at stake. That's all it was. I love that he will not acknowledge this. You know that Matt LaFleur loved beating Ben Johnson yesterday. When somebody calls you out like that, you want to get him. He did. And again, I thought this was a really good win for the Packers. Not a bad loss for the Bears at all. I did not agree with the fourth down play call. I think you run it there. You call one of your last two timeouts. You regroup after that. You're fine. Like I just did, but I see what, you know, they, if he would have, like you said before about Andy, if it worked out, he's a genius. You know, if he would have hit DJ Moore underneath and DJ Moore goes into the end zone. If you look at that replay, Charles Robinson tweeted it yesterday. If you want to see the video, like DJ Moore might walk into the end zone. Cause I don't know if Keyshawn Nixon can really react in time to tackle him, but whatever. It was still a good game. It was an ugly first half though. And these are two halves of football we play. And if Caleb Williams was better in the first 29 minutes of the game with a minute to go in the first half, he had 11 yards passing. It was not a good first half for Caleb Williams, but we're reminded he's a young quarterback. Sometimes he's going to go to Cole Kmet in the end zone instead of seeing DJ Moore underneath. Like there's still a growing process here with Caleb. He's had a fantastic year. I can't wait for this rematch of week 16, that Saturday night. It's going to be great. Thursday night that week, by the way, is Seahawks-Rams. Great, great week 16 coming up. But yeah, great game. I love the Matt LaFleur stuff. The Bears-Packers rivalry is back. I am happy for that as a native Wisconsinite. It's the best rivalry in the NFL to me. And the fact that it's really back and heated, and we're going to get a great rematch right away. I usually don't like that, like two times in 3 weeks, but we get it right again right away after the game we saw yesterday. I'm here for it. I think it's great. And we'll really – look, honestly, we'll really – I hate to keep moving the goalposts on the Bears, but we're kind of going to see what the Bears are made out of in that game. If you think you are who you think you are, go win that game at Soldier Field against the Packers. Tell them that, like, hey, we're not just going to be bullied by you anymore, as we have been for the past 10, 20, 30 years, whatever you want to demark that as. Go and beat the Packers in Soldier Field, and then all of a sudden, any question about you goes away.
Well, there's a very good chance that in 2 weeks when they play again, that they're going to be in the exact same situation with the Bears on top of the Packers and with Green Bay with a chance to beat the Bears and jump back in front like they did yesterday. Because next week, as mentioned, the Packers have to go to Denver.
Is legit.
That's a good game. That could be a loss. The Bears get the Browns at home. That could be a win.
It could be a loss, though. In 2 weeks, they meet again. The Browns defense, I never count the Browns defense out.
I'm just saying, you look at records. I'm certainly not going to sit here and pick against the Browns on a Monday.
They'll be favored. Yep.
Right. You look at the records. We could be sitting in the exact same spot 2 weeks from now, where these two teams play again. This time it's at Chicago, again with the Bears percentage points ahead of the Packers, and the Packers with a chance to beat them, sweep them, and permanently, well, not permanently, with two games to go at that point, but jump back over them, but do so with now a sweep in hand. And I'm with you. I used to cover the rivalry. For those who don't know, I have no reason why you would know. When I was a very young reporter right out of school, I covered the Bears every day for what was then WMAQ Radio. Now that has morphed into The Score, as CBS took their All News 0-0 and took The Score and put them all together. But I was there every day at the old Hallis Hall in downtown Lake Forest before they moved to this current one, covering Dave Craig and Eric Kramer and Raymond Harris and Curtis Conway and Brian Cox and that old team, Dave Wanstead, Dick Geron.
My first job out of college was covering the Packers, Andrew. So there you go.
We
had the old NFC Central.
My point is we
NFC
both
Central
appreciate times. This rivalry, right? And remember I don't remember the Ditka Forrest Gregg moments. I wasn't there for those, but I was there for, after Walter Payton died, Brian Robinson blocking that kick at the end of the Bears shocking the Packers and all those great chapters too. You could have your Yankees Red Sox. It gets far more hype. Okay. I'll take Bears Packers. It's as good a rivalry. Doesn't have a Babe Ruth trade, but it has, for my money, as much history for our favorite game as any rivalry in American sports. And right now, Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers control the NFC North. All right. Coming up, Shedeur Sanders looked really, really good yesterday. What does that mean? Frank, Andrew, Inside Coverage. Back on Inside Coverage, Andrew Siciliano and Frank Schwab. So, four teams were eliminated from NFL playoff contention. So that means we have nine now, but four teams got knocked out on Sunday. We're down to 23 teams. One of those teams was the Cleveland Browns when, surprisingly, and yes, I am the voice of the Cleveland Browns, so take that for what it's worth. Surprisingly, they lost to the Tennessee Titans. I did not think, Frank, this was going to happen. I thought that the Browns defense would dominate the Titans. Tennessee has a bad offense. I like Cam Ward a lot, but just statistically, look at the numbers. They can't score. They have not scored on an opening drive in 15 consecutive games dating back to last year. 15. Yet they scored on the opening drive this week because of a 50-yard kick return to start the game. Anyway, I thought the Browns would win like 17-3. Miles Garrett would get like three sacks. Shedeur Sanders would play efficient football, right? Take another step forward every week. Quinshon would run well. And then, bam, let's get out of here. That's a win. No. Tennessee won. In the process, kind of messed up. Their chance for the number one overall pick, still holding it for now, but now there's no margin of error with all these two-win teams. But regardless, Tennessee won, knocked the Browns out of the postseason. However, Shedeur Sanders was ridiculous. Now, he threw a pick, and that pick led to points. But down 14 in the fourth quarter, he led two long touchdown drives, 60 and 80 yards. Browns went for two after both. Shedeur botched the center exchange on one of them. He and Luke Whipler weren't on the same page. And the other one, they ran a trick play. It didn't work. Whatever. But Shedeur threw for, Frank, 364 yards. He had three touchdowns. Yeah. He also ran for a touchdown. And the only other quarterback in the last 25 years to have four plays of 50 yards or more in his first three starts is Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers. Wow. And today on Monday, Kevin Stefanski said, yes, Shedeur Sanders is the starting quarterback the rest of the way, which had to happen. He was asked point blank and he didn't blink. He could have said, guys, we're week to week here. That's what most coaches say. Kevin certainly does say that. He said, no, he's going to start the rest of the way. Frank, all Browns fans want is hope. This game, even in a loss, gave them hope.
It has to. I mean, I'm sitting there again, Buffalo Wild Wings, if you want to sponsor me, I'm there every Sunday. And I'm, you know, watching all the games, obviously. And that game wasn't at the top of my radar. I can't lie to you. But I kept looking. I'm like, Shedeur just keeps making plays. And then I finally go to the site. And I'm like, what is Shador's numbers? I'm like, oh, my goodness. He has 360 yards. Like, I just,
who started, I don't think he played that well.
Like, but yeah, he was unbelievable. So I want to, like, look, I'm just sitting there watching eight games at a time, eating some wings. You, as you said, voice of the Cleveland Browns. What did this start mean to you? Is this establish him for like 2026? Mm-hmm. Is this just him against a bad Titans defense? What did you see out of him watching him very, very closely every play that I can't pick up on TV like you could pick up? But this is one of the stories of the NFL season, one of the stories of the last month of, are we seeing something really happening here with Shedeur Sanders? What did you think overall of his performance?
Well, it came against Cam Ward too, so there's that storyline.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of people thought those two quarterbacks would go 1-2 in the draft. Clearly, that didn't happen. They went 1-144. I'm a big Cam Ward fan. I don't think anyone would blink if or would lie to you. If Cam Ward didn't go one, like if the Titans had taken Abdul Carter, Cam Ward would have gone two to the Browns. That guy's immensely talented. He is a leader. He's a dog. I would take Cam Ward any day in my corner. But this was the two of them, two guys who trained together. This was fun to see them on the same field. Respect between the two. They exchanged jerseys. Cam Ward, after the game, said, I'm going to sell this thing on eBay. The guy had 364 yards. I'm going to make a killing. Joking, obviously, tongue-in-cheek. But it did give Browns fans hope. There's a long way to go between now and 2026. But what this game did do is show a path forward where Shedeur could be that guy in 2026. Again, four more games to go. A lot can change. This is a week-to-week league. But what's so encouraging about what you saw from Shedeur against the Titans, and Kevin Stefanski said this on Monday, is he's getting better every week. He's progressing every week. Mm-hmm. The coaching points about footwork and maybe not running out the back of the pocket, all these little things about trusting it and seeing it and ripping it, NFL open as opposed to college open. You see the steps he takes every week. His ability to stretch the field cannot be overstated. Even on deep shots down the sideline on which they don't connect, Cedric Tillman made a great catch out of bounds, but it was out of bounds. Ball is a little bit drifting to the sideline there. Even those plays can loosen up the defense. Now, the Browns can't run the ball. They can't. At least they didn't yesterday. And that's concerning. You would hope that you'd be able to run the ball when you're able to take these deep shots, something that Shedeur has clearly added an element, obviously, to this offense. So that isn't happening. But yeah, it would be, what an amazing world the Browns could live in if you can exit these next four games and go, hey, we've got a guy. We feel comfortable moving on with.
Let me ask.
And have the two number one picks next year.
Right.
What if you don't need a quarterback?
That's what I was going to ask you.
Do you number ones,
Andrew? Do you think we've gotten to the point? Let's say Shedeur just plays average football the rest of the way, like not great, like not 364 games every week, because then it's kind of easy, and not 164 games yards every week, because then maybe you falter there. But he plays just average, solid football the rest of the way. Let's say the Browns have Mendoza on the board when they go up the pick, or whoever the quarterback flavor.
We're not there yet.
Okay. Too early. All right. We'll hold
too early
this because
I don't know.
I think that's the question that has to be answered over the last 4 weeks, though, because the Browns probably will be in a position by either trading the multiple picks or just somebody falls to them, because not everybody's sold on these quarterbacks, that the Browns are going to have to make at some point make the decision. Shedeur our guy or not? Are we in on this or are we out? Are we doing a U-turn and taking Mendoza or whoever the quarterback is who is going to be there for them? It's going to be really interesting.
It is, yeah, four more weeks to figure it out, obviously. And then you have an offseason program to figure it out. Like, both can be true. You could be blown away by what Shedeur gives you these next 4 weeks and then be equally blown away by one of these quarterbacks in the draft. And then you have a dilemma and you have a decision to make.
Then
and it's a good problem to have, by the way. All of that is
spot.
A good problem.
How many teams are kicking themselves right now? You tell me the Pittsburgh Steelers couldn't use a Shedeur Sanders right now? Telling me fill in the blank on five, the Raiders? You telling me the Raiders wouldn't be better off right now if they had Shedeur Sanders and Geno Smith? Like, even if Shedeur doesn't work out, like, there's a path there. Yeah.
Listen, and Shedeur is a work in progress as well. For all the people that want to go, well, he should have been number one in training camp. Guys, he there's a lot to learn, okay? Patrick Mahomes didn't start week one. I'm not saying he's Mahomes, but you understand what I'm saying. David Carr, and I've had this conversation. I had it with David when he came into Cleveland this year during training camp. Obviously, former number one overall pick, the Houston Texans. Yeah. David, I said point blank, are you team sit or team start as a rookie? He goes, oh, team sit. Absolutely. And he took a beating. Set the NFL record for sacks taken as a rookie with the expansion Texans. He's like, sit and learn. Absolutely. So all the people that want to scream and yell with their content from every corner of their basement saying that, you know, some kind of travesty was done by not starting him week one. You bring young players along slowly. What was great, and Dylan Sampson pointed it out this morning, the Browns' fourth round rookie running back from Tennessee. And it's something I didn't even realize in the moment. David Njoku had to leave the game, unfortunately, with a knee injury after catching a touchdown from Shedeur. He got hurt on that play. Nice ball thrown to the corner of the end zone. So Njoku is out. On that final drive, other than Jerry Jeudy, every skill position player for the Browns was a rookie. Shedeur Sanders, Quinshon Judkins, Dylan Sampson, Isaiah Bond, Gage Larvadan, and then Jerry Jeudy. So those two long touchdown drives in the end of the game, they were all rookies. Now Blake Whitehart came on, veteran tight end.
Player, I'll tell you that.
At one point. Yeah. There's so like that is reason for optimism.
Yeah, Fannin was the best.
Is the best draft class in the NFL. If you take the two quarterbacks out, take out Dylan Gabriel, take out Shedeur Sanders. Forget they ever happened. The other players in that draft class, it's the best draft class in the NFL. Mason Graham, Carson Schwessinger, who's not only going to be defensive rookie of the year, I think he should be an all-pro, but he's a pro bowler.
Oh wow.
You have Quinshon Judkins, Dylan Sampson, Isaiah Bond, Harold Fannin. Bond hasn't done much, but Fannin had 100 yards and a high point touchdown there that could have tied the game, obviously. So, yeah, it gives you hope, Frank. That's all you ask for. It's all anybody
could hope for. And the two first-round picks next year. And the two first-round picks. The Jaguars pick didn't work out as well as the Browns would have hoped, but it's still two first-round picks.
There's still a month left. Yeah. You never know.
if Shedeur is the answer, if Shedeur is the answer, and I'm not even saying he needs to be an MVP at any point. If he's a top 10 starter, he's 10th best starter in the NFL. My goodness, you could start to build something really special in Cleveland. And I'm based in Colorado. I watched a lot of Shedeur Sanders. I was really impressed with him in Colorado in college. And you hear the knocks on him, and I'm like, I guess so. But boy, he's really accurate. He's really good throwing down the field. But I guess you guys are right. But now you're seeing it. Now you're seeing this is what I saw in Colorado. This is what we all saw in Colorado, where he is. He makes plays. He's not afraid to throw it deep. He's on time. He's accurate. Is he a finished product? Goodness, no. There's a long way to go, but there's a lot of promise there. He keeps getting better. Like you said, better every week.
Yeah, there's no quarterback right now that I look at in the college draft. Now, if Dante Moore comes out, that's another issue. Who knows if Ty Simpson comes out? There are a lot of moving pieces here in the quarterback class with NIL and who knows, and transfer portal, and we're not even in the playoff yet. How about James Madison, by the way? I got a couple of James Madison Dukes in my family. How about James Madison going on the road to Oregon? What a world we live in. That's pretty cool. But there's no quarterback right now where I'm like, I'm going to trade the farm for that guy. Now, you may fall in love with one of them between now and the third Thursday in April. As it stands right now, the Giants have the number one overall pick. Then it's Vegas and Tennessee and Cleveland and New Orleans. So Cleveland right now is number four. Then you have Washington. So you think the Giants don't need a quarterback. The Raiders at number two do. The Titans at number three don't. Cleveland, you don't know. New Orleans, honestly, I know they beat the Bucs. Don't know. Washington, you don't need one. The Jets, you do. They're at seven. Arizona, I think Kyler has played his final down as a Cardinal, so you probably need one there. Who's making the decisions? Who knows? Atlanta is sitting at nine. That pick is going to the Rams. And then Cincinnati is sitting at 10. So we have We have months Rams to figure out the top 10 of the draft.
Rams could draft a quarterback. Yeah. I mean,
they could.
At some point, you got to replace Stafford. So they're on board there for quarterback. Yeah.
But what if they go win the Super Bowl? Don't you bring Matthew Stafford back? I mean, look, we're a long way.
You bring him back, but you bring him back and a rookie. Like, I think at some point, you got to be. But yeah, it's going to be an unbelievable draft because so many teams need quarterbacks. And who knows what the quarterback landscape is going to look like by April.
All right. Frank, you ready for one more thing before we go?
Indeed, I am. I know you don't partake in gambling there, Andrew, but I do sometimes. I pay attention to that world.
But you do.
Not allowed to, but I'm not under those rules from NFL employees. So I'm sitting there watching Broncos Raiders yesterday, and I saw maybe the craziest bad beat I have ever seen in all my years following the NFL. For those who don't know, Broncos are 7.5-point favorites, and they're leading the whole game. They're by far the better team. There's just no question. And for those who don't know point spread stuff very well, that means the Broncos have to win by 8 points or more, right? But they're in fine shape. They're up by 10 late in the game, even though Geno Smith exits the game. Kenny Pickett comes. Still fine. And Kenny Pickett completes a pass to Tyler Lockett. They have no timeouts left. They complete it to the middle of the field. Tyler Lockett gets tackled by Brandon Jones. Game's over. The clock is ticking. But a rule that came into play because, I'll give you a little history lesson here, Andrew. I know you know this, but not everybody does. 1960 NFL championship game, Chuck Bednarik tackles Jim Taylor, basically sits on him until the clock runs out the final seconds and then says to Jim Taylor, you can get up now. This effing game is over. Well, you can't do that in the NFL anymore. You can't just pin a guy down, right? So Brandon Jones does, though, kind of pins Tyler Lockett down. And the officials just decide that's delay of game, which it is. It's a totally reasonable call. Throw the flag, stops the clock at 5 seconds. Clock was going to run out. Now, all of a sudden, the Raiders have a choice. Do you go for a Hail Mary? Do you kick a field goal? Pete Carroll probably thinking, well, there's no chance to complete a Hail Mary in less than 5 seconds, but maybe we can kick a field goal and have 1 second on the clock for an odds. So he brings out Daniel Carlson. Daniel Carlson makes the field goal. The Raiders lose by 7 points in a game where Tyler Lockett is on the ground and the clock is running out. The Raiders are going to lose by 10, but instead an absolute miracle for anybody who's crazy enough to pick the Raiders yesterday. That was my one more thing because I was sitting watching that. Thankfully, nothing of substance on the line in that game and just laughing because that was the most absurd thing I saw at the NFL on Sunday. One of the worst beats you will ever see in your life.
It was absurd. And the explanation is like, well, if I kicked, I need the two scores. If I kick the field goal, then maybe miraculously I get an onside kick and have a second and throw a Hail Mary.
Like, have a second left. And by the way, folks, the NFL's not rigged. It is not. Please stop with the NFL being rigged. Nothing was rigged about that. It was a call that could have been made, could not have been made, but he made the call. It's perfectly legit. Pete Carroll's not trying to cover the spread. Pete Carroll's trying to be like, I might have a 0.111% chance to win this game. What is that miracle going to entail? Well, it's going to entail maybe kicking a field goal, having 1 second left. There's nothing other than that. It was just hilarious how that played out.
The only people that think the NFL is rigged are people that made bad picks. No, it's your fault. You made the bad pick.
You made that pick, yes.
You made the bad pick. Don't blame them. Don't blame them. It's not their fault. It's your fault. You picked poorly. There's no responsibility for people in anything. Oh, no. I didn't make the bad pick. They screwed me over. No. You made the bad pick. Look in the mirror. Take accountability. At the end of the game, they have to play all the seconds on the clock. The points all add up. It's cumulative. At the end, they look at the score. I know. Scream at me all you want. All right. Here's my one more thing. We saw something yesterday from the Minnesota Vikings that had not happened since 1992. It had been 33 years since what the Vikings did yesterday. So last week, the Vikings, with rookie quarterback Max Brosmer, went to Seattle and got shut out. Brosmer threw 4 picks. It looked ugly. But then this week, the Vikings got J.J. McCarthy back, and they shut out the Commanders 31-0. The Vikings are the first team since the 92 Broncos to get shut out 1 week and then bounce back and shut out their next opponent the following week. It's a crazy world. It's a week-by-week league. It's a binary business. 1 week, you're great. The next week, you're awful. Or in the Vikings' case, 1 week, you're awful. And the next week, you're great. That is my one more thing. I think today's show was somewhere in the middle. Tomorrow, we're going to try to be great. But it's not Frank's fault. Clearly. It's mine. So there. there's my self-deprecation of the day. Frank, fun show. Appreciate you, sir, as always.
Absolutely.
And glad to know you were not on the other side of that bad beat.
Neither side, thankfully. I'd have been
for recreational purposes. And coming back tomorrow, we have your playoff projections, right?
Absolutely. We'll see. We'll see in this crazy AFC what the bracket's going to look like.
So join us on Tuesday's Inside Coverage for Frank's guaranteed playoff projections, all 14 slots, AFC and NFC. For Frank Schwab, I'm Andrew Siciliano. Thank you for listening to, subscribing, liking, and sharing and all that, and watching Inside Coverage. So long. Wow.